Can you tell me a little bit about how it started, who had the idea, and who pushed for it?
Okay, well, it started in the present administration, the Obama administration, and President Obama has a strategy for American innovation, and challenges are mentioned in there. And President Obama also issued an open government directive, which I'm sure you're familiar with,
yes.
And challenges were mentioned also there. And so the reason challenge.gov was created was a memo from the White House Office of Management and Budget that came out on March the 8th, 2010. And that asked for GSA, the agency that I work for, General Services Administration. They asked us to create a government-wide challenge platform. And so that's how we ended up with challenge.gov.
Yeah.
And in this March memo, we were given 120 days to get this done, and we actually got it done on time. So so that's 4 months. So we made our deadline.
How did you implement it concretely? Is it a partnership with a company? How?
It was a partnership with a company. We were offered by two different companies. We were offered. Two companies offered to build challenge.gov for us for free.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually a no cost contract.
Uh-huh.
So what we did, even though we were offered, we got offers from two different companies for a free product, we did do a government request for information. And we did put out a solicitation so that other companies could have the opportunity to weigh in.
Mm-hmm.
And we did receive 6 additional responses, but the original 2 were still the best. And we ultimately chose Challenge Post, the best vendor in our opinion to partner with on challenge.gov.
So it's zero cost from at least from the technological point of view.
Exactly. So the cost is the cost are basically my staff time.
Yeah.
I work on challenge.gov probably 75% of my time, and the company that we partnered with, as I mentioned, is a Challenge Post, and they are a New York City company.
Yeah. Is it suppose a startup or a newfound company?
Let's see. I don't know if it's. I'm not sure if it's a startup. It's a few years old. Let me see if I can find.
But it's a small company, as I understand. It's not a large vendor.
Right. It's a small company. Yeah. Let me see if I can find close by. If I can find where when it started, because I actually have their response to our RFI sitting in front of me. So it probably tells me. Okay, so it was founded in January 2008.
Yeah, so it is very, very new.
Yeah.
Listen, so it's only you working on this, basically, in terms of staff, in terms of how many people?
We have another person who spends part of her time.
And what's your main task in this? Is to animate it, to teach, to train, to?
I'd say teaching and training. Those are good ways to put it. We help not only our own agency GSA, but people at other agencies use challenge.gov. And based on what we've learned over the past year, the site launched about a year ago, we also help other agencies figure out how to design their challenges. So it's not only a matter of putting it up on challenge.gov, but figuring out what's the best way to design your challenge so you get the most participation. And we take the challenges on challenge.gov and we use social media to promote not only the site itself, but the individual challenges on it, because we want them to get participation. So we have our Twitter account, ChallengeGov, and our Facebook page.
Yeah. And do you do the dissemination yourself, or do you advise the agency to how to do dissemination? In particular, because for some challenges, I suppose they are very open and Facebook is good, but there are some which are very specific, where you need to reach a very specific target, very specialized, very knowledgeable. Do you have different strategies for this, or do you just address more general and open challenges?
Well, I guess I'd say that, you know, we as the challenge.gov staff use Facebook and Twitter, but the agency that is running the challenge, like let's say it's NASA, they use whatever avenues they think are best to promote the challenge. So it's kind of a two-pronged effort.
Yeah.
We do a little bit, and we probably do, you know, 10%, and then the agency running the challenge does 90% of it. And they use, you know, maybe a press release or whatever traditional or social media they think is best to reach who they need to reach.
I understand that there was a legislative decision which simplified the organization of inducement prizes in the U.S. I don't remember the name of the act. But it was a few months ago that basically...
Oh, yeah, the America Competes. Yeah,
exactly. Was it relevant for your functioning, or it's another domain?
My understanding about the America Competes Act is that prior to America Competes, there were only a few agencies that had the legal authority to run challenges and give prizes. I think it was NASA and the I can't remember all the agencies, but it was just maybe three. But now that the America Competes Act has passed and been signed, now all federal agencies have the authority to use challenges as a tool in our toolbox, so to speak. So it did open up things here at GSA, because we, prior to America Competes, we didn't have challenge authority, but now we do. So, and I think a lot of agencies are, the White House guidance just came out August 22nd. I can send that to you if you want to see it.
That will be very useful, absolutely.
And so I think a lot of agencies were waiting for that guidance to come out. And so I'm hoping that we see a lot more challenges in the near future as agencies, you know, figure out what they can and can't do.
So you think it was a joint action, a coordinated action, the challenge.gov website and the America Competes Act? Was it part of the joint strategy, or was it more accidental, the fact that they came together at the same time?
I think it was accidental, because I think the America Competes Act had been tried before. But I don't know all the details on that. But I think that something similar, either America Competes or something similar, had been tried before and it didn't work. Maybe in the previous administration, but it worked this time. So I think it was it was accidental.
And one in inducement prizes, it's always a key issue is the good design of the prize, so that it's attractive, it's doable, but it's ambitious. How do you manage the design of the prize? Do you advise? Do you have, for example, meetings with potential participants? Do you advise the agency? How does it work?
We advise the agency, and also, we give federal, our own agency and other agencies, the best advice we can. Also, the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, they also give advice. And the federal agencies get advice from their own coworkers where they are. Like NASA and Health and Human Services are two agencies that I can think of in our federal government that are pretty experienced with challenges, so they don't need as much advice.
You just passed the first birthday, if I understand well. What's your assessment? What's your balance of looking backwards?
Well, we've increased our participation quite a bit. When we launched a year ago, we had about 35 challenges from about 15 different federal agencies, and now we're up to almost 120 from 36 different agencies. As far as we can tell, count-wise, we've had 1,500 solutions submitted from the public, and about the total amount of prize money is about $38 million. And, but there actually is one prize that kind of is kicking that number up a little bit. The Department of Energy's lighting prize was $15 or $20 million, so wow. that one prize kind of bumps up that figure a little bit.
That was on LED lighting.
It was an alternative to the conventional light bulb, and it was recently won by Philips, which is I think a headquartered in Europe, but their U.S. division was the winner.
That's an interesting topic, actually. To what extent can you launch prizes which are restricted to the U.S. or they are open to companies worldwide?
Well, yeah, that's. I'm glad you asked that, because there is there's provisions in the America Competes Act that says only. I think there's language in there saying that only U.S. citizens and U.S. companies can enter and win challenges, because if the prize is money, it's U.S. taxpayer money. So the thought is that it should stay with U.S. citizens and U.S. companies. But I think there are, there are some federal agencies that have authority outside America Competes that allows them to still give prizes to, you know, foreign companies and people in other countries. When we get off the phone, I'm going to send you some examples of about 10 or so really successful challenges from recent history, and a lot of those were awarded to people overseas.
That's very interesting. The
U.S. Air Force has given $20,000 prizes to people in Peru. So
that's very interesting. And so these agencies, which like you mentioned, the Air Force, were there agency who previously run prizes who then came to run it within challenge.gov or using the platform of challenge.gov?
There are, I would say, Defense Department and NASA. They have, even though challenge.gov is only a year old, the Defense Department and NASA have years of experience prior to challenge.gov. And they, NASA and Defense Department, they use a site called Innocentive.com, which Innocentive. NASA and Defense Department still pretty much use that website, but to do their challenges. But on challenge.gov, they can list their challenge on challenge.gov, but it's even though it's being run on Innocentive. So some agencies like DOD and NASA, you know, they aren't running their challenge completely on challenge.gov, but they're putting it on there and linking to Innocentive just to get, you know, hopefully some extra entries and extra publicity. So, you know, for now, NASA and Defense Department are sticking with Innocentive.
That's an interesting topic, actually, because I suppose some prize organizers, I know a few companies who do organize prizes as a business, are kind of seeing some kind of competition from challenge.gov. Did you have any complaint about this?
No, we haven't yet. Another thing that we're working on is... in that March 8th, 2010 memo that I mentioned that asked us to build challenge.gov, we were also asked to set up a government contract mechanism so that federal agencies who wanted to use something other than challenge.gov could more easily contract with organizations like Innocentive and Topcoder. So we did set that up, and we are always working to expand the list of vendors that's there. So You know, we like challenge.gov. It's very easy to use and it's free, but for agencies that have the funds, if they want to use something else, they can.
Yeah, I understand. You could provide like some kind of basic service. You lower the barriers to enter for all the agencies, but then if there are special needs, they can go for specialized vendors.
Exactly. You said that very well. Very.
So how would you consider, from the perspective of an agency, how do you think they see challenge.gov within the overall, let's say, procurement and innovation activities? Do they see this as complementary, as a substitute for procurement, or as a very important tool, or something they just do, they try, let's say, it's nice to have, they try, but it doesn't really affect the bottom line, or let's say the core activities of the agencies? How do you see this? How do they see this, in your opinion?
I think pulling up some just a moment. I think there's a lot of government challenges being run right now around mobile apps.
Yeah.
And we do have some estimates as far as how much it would cost to do a contract or a procurement for something like that, and how it can be done a lot more quickly and a lot more and a lot cheaper with a challenge. For example, the U.S. Department of Agriculture did a challenge for games for kids, and the games teach kids about healthy eating and exercise, and
yeah,
it's estimated that they got $5 million worth of apps for $60,000 in prize money. And some of that prize money was put up by private companies, so it wasn't even all at USDA's cost. And we're also, like I mentioned, the Air Force earlier and NASA, I think they're finding people outside the traditional government procurement process are participating in challenges, so they're getting solutions that they didn't expect and ones they wouldn't have thought about. So I don't think it's fully in. I don't think it's really seen quite yet as a total replacement, you know, for procurement. But you know, if it's a problem that your agency is kind of stuck on, you've tried procurement in the past, you know, a challenge is a good way to, you know, bring in some out of the box thinking.
And do you think, from the point of your participants, do you think, well, obviously, if it's citizens, it's another story, but let's say a company who develop apps, they offer you $5 million worth of work for $60,000, don't you think this could be unfair towards the company? Why do they participate, in other words?
Okay. Well, we're finding that the people that are participating are individuals, they're private citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So, there always is in the challenges a clear spelling out in the rules of the intellectual property situation. So we're finding that, you know, private citizens are gladly entering these apps challenges. A lot of them are college students.
Mm.
And they enter as a project for school, or they form a team and they enter as a team. So it's not really companies that are entering, but it's more private individuals.
I understand. So what can you tell me about the outcome of this? Is it you mentioned you were going to send me 12 or 10 success stories. Can you mention one? Do people come out with really good ideas? Because at the end of the day, that's the whole success factor, is whether a good idea comes out of it or not.
Yeah, I can give you an example. A couple from NASA and the Air Force. Like, NASA found a way to better preserve food in space for astronauts, and it was a different material, graphite foil, that is kind of outside of the food packaging industry. The Air Force was looking for ways that, you know, in combat situations that they could stop a fleeing vehicle. And this also has civilian police applications, but they submit a solution. Someone that submitted a solution came up with something that's sort of like an airbag that you throw underneath the vehicle, and it inflates and it stops the vehicle, but it doesn't hurt the occupants or hurt the vehicle. So when you have like an evidence situation, you haven't destroyed anything. So that's an example. The Air Force also had a challenge about better ways to deliver humanitarian food and water packages so that they could be dropped into more populated areas but without causing any harm to anyone. Right now they're kind of limited to dropping these packages in unpopulated areas. NASA came up with a way to clean clothes in space. So that's just a few examples of just really solid.
Yeah.
You know, and I think like the one about the Air Force with the dropping the food and water humanitarian relief, it was a $20,000 prize, and I think it was awarded to two people. They took sort of the best from one solution and the best from another, and they're going to, you know, move forward and try to meld the best of both worlds there.
Yeah. So the participants you mentioned are normally people who work on or study on related fields, but not professionally engaged in the domain in general. I mean, as a general pattern, kind of amateur or people learning in training.
Yeah, you could say that. And also, you know, if I work for a company during the daytime, I'm free to enter a challenge in the evening as, you know, in my role as a private citizen. So,
yeah.
So, I would think that the, engineering types who enter, Air Force challenges and NASA challenges, you know, maybe they work for, Northrop Grumman or something full time, and they enter challenges in their spare time.
So, and usually these challenges are good at leveraging ideas. To what extent do they call for concrete solutions? Sometimes there are some challenges we are just calling for very general ideas how to solve it. Some challenges call for prototypes and really working solutions. What's your impression in terms of what goes on challenge.gov?
So how do they submit something that's not electronic or something that's not paper?
No, I mean the challenges. When the challenges look for a solution, what do they concretely ask for? Do they ask for idea or do they ask for products?
I'm not sure how to answer that one.
Let's make one example. This about games. The games for healthy eating.
Yeah, they actually had to submit a working game or mobile application. But some of the challenges, like you said, you are just being asked for a concept paper. So they kind of range. It's different for each one.
Is it possible that the highest, I suppose for $20 million you had to deliver a solution, not to come out with the you mentioned the lead prize. What do they have to submit to get this prize money?
Yeah, they did. I think they did have to submit a certain amount of sample light bulbs, and then those bulbs were tested for quite a long time by the Department of Energy. I think Philips was the only company that might have been the only company that entered that challenge, and they entered quite a long time ago, and it was in testing forever, and they did finally award the prize. They decided that, you know, the Philips product did meet the criteria, so
right.
That was a case where, you know, a solid object had to be submitted. So
okay, let's look a bit now. We're going towards the end, so let's try to look at the future and how do you see the trend Do you see an increasing usage? Do you see this as expanding and upscaling gradually, very fastly? Or, for example, there was a negative impact from the budgetary crisis and the budgetary cuts, like for many other open government initiatives?
I'm curious to see how that turns out as well, because I haven't heard anything from any other agencies that are saying, well, I don't think we're going to be doing any challenges because of budget cuts. It seems like they're turning toward challenges because they need to do things for less money than they had before, especially in the mobile apps area.
Yeah.
More and more people are going on to government websites and private websites, not at a desktop computer or even a laptop anymore. It's, you know, iPad or iPhone.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of government agencies don't have that kind of talent on their staff to develop mobile apps or mobile versions of websites. So I think that's going to become even more popular than it already has been.
And what about the key lessons learned that you would like? Let's imagine you are talking to European governments. Do you think they should adopt it? Do you think this should be something that should be repeated in other countries? And what are the suggestions, the recommendations they feel like giving in order to make it work?
I think one key lesson learned is, well, for example, challenge.gov is very easy to use, but we find that a lot of agencies are running into trouble inside their own walls, like with their Office of General Counsel or their procurement office, because this is something that's never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
The attorneys at agencies are worried about something going wrong. So I think one key lesson we've learned is that, getting it through the bureaucracy at your agency you should probably give yourself longer than you think it's going to take to get all the signatures that you need. So we encourage everyone that we talk to make sure they've dotted all their T's and crossed all their I's, and we encourage them to look at what other agencies have done so they can show their attorneys, hey, look, there's precedent for this at this agency and that agency, and we try to connect, you know, the attorneys at one place to the attorneys at another so they can talk and feel better about, you know, going forward and doing something that's a little bit different. So I think that, you know, kind of to sum that up, I guess a big lesson learned is the technology is probably not the obstacle, but it's, you know, more bureaucratic ones than anything else, and so a lot of time is needed to get through those.
And would you suggest other governments or have you had contacts with government outside the U.S. to disseminate this experience?
Well, I gave a presentation a couple weeks ago to some people from the government of India, but they were here to learn about one of our other websites, data.gov, and they're building their own version in India, I think, of data.gov, and so I did talk to them about challenge.gov, but I don't think they're quite ready for challenges yet. I think they're still working on data.gov.
So you think data.gov is a prerequisite of challenge.gov?
Maybe. I mean, maybe putting your data out on something like data.gov it's kind of a step in the open government direction, and it's kind of a baby step, and maybe that will get some governments, you know, more comfortable with being that open. But I haven't heard of any specific cases of other countries who are looking to build something like challenge.gov. I get a lot of emails from state and city governments in the U.S. who want to use challenge.gov, but unfortunately, we can't do that right now. So,
really?
I'm seeing, unfortunately, it's outside the scope of our contract with Challenge Post, and it's outside the scope of what we were asked to do by the White House. So, but, you know, I think a lot of state and local governments are interested in challenges. A lot of them have done, a lot of cities have done apps challenges, like New York City.
Yeah, certainly.
So maybe some states will build their own challenge.gov or some cities.
So looking ahead now, just to finish this conversation, looking ahead at, let's say, 5 years from now, how do you see the future in terms of usage of challenge.gov or of similar prizes? Do you think in 5 years every public administration, for example, will have at least one challenge per year? Or do you think that's overly ambitious? How do you see this? Can you give me any kind of idea of your perception?
Well, I think one challenge each year, that sounds perfectly reasonable, because right now there's only a couple agencies that I can think of that haven't used challenge.gov. I think maybe like we have an agency called the Small Business Administration and the Department of Commerce.
Oh, really? So almost all the agencies who could use it did use it.
Yes, we have 36 different agencies and bureaus within agencies who are either using it now or have used it. So I think each agency having one a year, maybe even more, sounds perfectly within reason. And I think that maybe federal agencies will set up like a challenges office or an innovation office. We're finding a lot of some agencies have already done that. They've set up like an office of innovation, or they have a deputy secretary for innovation. And so we think maybe prizes and challenges will become a little more institutionalized, and people will start writing down their practices and procedures, and it'll get to the point where it won't be something new, but something that, you know, they can go to a manual, and they can kind of look at how to do it and how it's been done in the past. So,
great, thanks a lot. That was really inspiring.